This podcast is intended for investment professionals only.
Hello and welcome to Fixed Income in Focus, our regular podcast for 2024, where this time round we'll be chatting all things emerging market debt related, the macroeconomic background, EMD positioning, EMD credit ratings, and last but not least, we'll be navigating our way through the wave of upcoming elections about to take place in LATAM and Asia. My name is Frances Watson, and I'm delighted to be joined by two guests today, Uday Patnaik, Head of Emerging Market Debt, and Eric Luth, Global Emerging Market Economist. Woody, Eric, welcome to LGIM Talks.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning to you both. And Eric, can I start with you first? Should we begin with a short summary of the economic landscape in emerging market land?
Sure. So all in all, I would say we have a relative constructive outlook on the year for emerging markets. The IMF is predicting 4.2% growth. That's not stellar, but it's solid. More importantly, the growth differential over advanced economies is projected to reach an eight-year high. And this kind of growth differential is an important predictor of how EM assets perform usually. On the inflation front, inflation continues to come down. Because of that, EMs are able to cut rates. Note that that's happening well ahead of the Fed and the ECB. That's because particularly in Latin America, they started well ahead of those central banks, and there is still a reasonable risk premium in there. So these cuts should also help growth. Then we have current account surpluses. We like that in emerging markets. It makes them less vulnerable. Forex reserves continue to rise. Actually, they exceed external debt falling due over the next year by a factor of two, also very healthy. The only fly in the ointment is public debt. Public debt after COVID is very close to all-time highs. I would say that's maybe the only point which we are not so happy with. The only good thing here again is that the share of forex debt, the most dangerous debt, is at much lower levels than it used to be in the past. So all in all, I would say a constructive outlook.
Okay, noted on the debt front, Eric, but I just want to pick you up there on that EM-DM growth differential, as you say, a potential driver of the asset class. And I want to bring in Woody here now, because with that background in mind, Woody, how has EM debt fared as an asset class, maybe year to date, but that's a bit short term. I mean, maybe over the last 6 months as well, but with particular reference, if you could give us on investment grade and high yield.
Yes. Well, interestingly, emerging market debt, and we're talking specifically now about, for example, hard currency debt, the spreads we're witnessing today are at around the tightest levels for the last couple of years. And over the last 6 months, we've seen a continuous rally in emerging market spreads as the spreads are continue to tighten and tighten. Now, what is very interesting, though, is that if you were to look at the returns year to date, for example, so almost 3 months, the significant outperformance is in EM high yield debt. And we're seeing that, for example, in a lot of countries that are rated triple C, single B, and so forth. And that's where the outsized gains have been. But looking at both IG and high yield, there has been a tremendous rally, generally speaking, in both sub-asset classes over the last 3 to 6 months.
Okay, and you're talking about high yield, and you're talking about issuers, as you say, in that triple BC, what we would typically know as junk, right?
Yes.
And is that, do you think, because the Fed has come out, and obviously the Fed leads on a lot of this policy, it's come out and said, okay, we've reached peak interest rates. Is the correlation that strong?
Well, I would say that, yes, the backdrop is quite supportive. As you said, Frances, is that I think most people believe, including us, that at least the Fed hikes are over and more likely than not, during the second half of this year, we will probably see several rate cuts from the Fed. But a lot of the stories and a lot of the sort of the rally that we're seeing is due to idiosyncratic reasons. And what you're seeing today, and I think this is very important, is that there is no systemic default cycle in emerging market sovereigns today or in EM corporates. And in fact, what you're seeing is the defaults that happened several years ago. So countries like Zambia, Ghana, Sri Lanka, we expect will be restructuring their debt over the next few months. And this is leading to a tremendous rally in some of those credits. And then you have the reform impetus in countries like Argentina, where their external debt year to date is up approximately 50%. You have other countries like Turkey, which has sort of been a consensus underweight for many people over the last few years. But you're seeing today a more orthodox monetary policy in place, and you're seeing a significant rally in hard currency, corporate and sovereign spreads in Turkey as well. So it is fairly broad based, but a lot of the reason is not just the Fed, but idiosyncratic stories, reform stories in many of these countries.
So are you basically saying that corporate balance sheets are healthier than they once were?
Yes. Well, the default cycle, if we're looking at corporates, so projected defaults this year in EM corporates is expected to be at around 4%. I think the historical average has been 4.2. If we were to exclude China high yield, i.e. China property, it's more like 3.3%. But specifically, when we're looking at corporate investment grade credits, that what you're seeing is the net leverage is lower in the indices, for example, than USIG. The default rate historically has been very low. The spread you're getting per turn of leverage versus, for example, USIG is extremely in favor of emerging market IG. It is actually an improving balance sheet, generally speaking. I mean, emerging market captures geographically a very broad sector, of course, sure. Or countries. But yes, it is generally improving.
Okay. All right. That's good to hear. So against just on the back of what Woody's just said then, Eric, I just want to turn to your thoughts on EM currencies now, because they are linked, aren't they, to US monetary policy? And given Jay Powell's confirmation that we are getting three rate cuts for the remainder of the year, I mean, what's your outlook then for EM currencies versus the dollar? The dollar doesn't seem to want to go down terribly much, does it?
Yes, you're absolutely right. So yeah, first of all, we agree with this kind of broad outlook. And if the US does cut rates and the US dollar weakens, obviously that would be good for emerging currencies. It's almost a tautology, right? If the US dollar weakens, other currencies have to appreciate. So yeah, I totally agree with you here. But we have a relative benign outlook for EM currencies, not only because of that, but there are some other reasons why we are optimistic. One of them is, as I said earlier, that the median emerging market has a current account surplus, which doesn't happen very often in history for emerging markets. But they have a current account surplus. That means they are selling more to global markets than they're importing. All of this happens in US dollars. So they have a US dollar surplus, which needs to be exchanged into their local currency. And that creates upward pressure on their currency. So that's one reason why we are quite optimistic. The other reason is that currencies of emerging markets in the past have fallen more than the inflation differential would have demanded. So obviously, if you have higher inflation in emerging markets than you have in advanced economies, which you usually have, then their currencies need to weaken so competitiveness is maintained. What we observe is that currencies have actually fallen more than was needed. And that means that they are relatively cheap. And so risks are really to the upside here, towards stronger currencies. It's not only currencies, by the way, who will benefit from a weaker dollar and lose US policies. Also local currency bonds, their returns are to 75% driven by currencies, but also hard currency bonds. I mean, if US interest rates go down, the US exchange, the US dollar weakens, that means that the debt burden on those emerging markets is lower, and risk premiums will tighten further.
So benign backdrop for currencies. And in terms of credit ratings then, and where we are actually in the ratings assigned, Woody, to all the individual issuers, I mean, where are we in the ratio of upgrades to downgrades?
Yeah, I mean, in the last few years, there have been more downgrades or outlook change to negative. However, this year, we believe that tide should turn, that you should see in aggregate more outlook positive changes from the agencies or upgrades, outright upgrades this year. Again, partly that's due to what I was saying is that you should see this year quite a few restructurings, quite a few reforms in countries, for example, like Egypt, where they have a new IMF package, Pakistan as well with a new IMF package, and these would lead to outlook positives, improvements, as well as upgrades. We would forecast over the next 6 to 12 months.
Okay.
And it's already started, by the way.
Okay, yeah. Interesting. Yeah. So now, how then, Eric, are investors positioned for EM debt? I thought positioning had been a bit light, but put us right on that one.
Yeah, no, you're right. Positioning is indeed light. We have seen quite a bit of outflows from emerging markets over the past years. So $125 billion of outflows just in 2022 and 2023. Actually, even this year, year to date, we had slight outflows of $7 billion. So given that positioning is light, we can see it, for example, in local currency sovereign bonds. In 2018, foreign investors held 25% of outstanding local currency sovereign bonds in the typical emerging market, so the median emerging market. Meanwhile, that share has fallen from 25% to 15%. So very light positioning there.
What do you think are the reasons for that?
What are the reasons? I mean, we had a very tough, we've looked at a really tough few years in China, which is a main anchor for emerging markets. You know, COVID has been tough. Then in those periods, and very, very aggressive hikes of US rates, right? So all these things, if you put them together, they tend to be not good for risk assets, and emerging markets are risk assets.
Yeah, and I suppose people, I mean, as happened last year, didn't it? I mean, dollar cash was a great place to be, right, when they were hiking. So that
exactly
that makes perfect sense to me. Now, so in terms of demand, we've broadly covered, but on the other side, on supply and new issuance in EM debt, where are we there?
So we have quite a high amount of issuance this year compared to previous years, which is usually not good for prices, but there are two good points. First of all, half of what's to be issued this year has already been issued, so that's really water under the bridge. And then we also have lots of cash flow back to investors from amortizations this year and coupons, and that's almost about what we expect in new issuance this year. And that means that you really need very few inflows, new inflows into the asset class to sustain prices. So a lot of issuance, but also a lot of it has happened already, and a lot of cash flow really to pick up that issuance.
Okay. I mean, we have talked about light positioning. Eric's mentioned it, Woody. What do you think would be the catalyst for more investors to come into the asset class?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Look, my feeling is that, you know, as Eric mentioned, over the last years, we've had just a rapid increase in rates by G7 central banks, for example. And I think quite a few clients who I've spoken to, you know, they've been happy to sit on, for example, whether it's money market accounts, but there was no urgency to go back into fixed income, really, in general, including emerging markets, because, you know, the yield that they've been getting, frankly, sitting on a dollar LIBOR type account
for no risk,
you know, is attractive, and it is attractive. But what I think you're going to see, and you're starting to already see signs of that, is sort of what let's call it FOMO, right? The fear of missing out here. And assuming that we're correct, that inflation has peaked in not only, you know, in the G7, but most EM economies, especially the large ones, and you're already seeing emerging market countries cut rates, but the next step would be DM central banks cutting rates. And we've seen that already yesterday, started with the Swiss National Bank.
Saw that.
Right? And the view is that towards the second half of this year, that you will see 2 to 3 rate cuts from the Fed. And I think as you see the returns improve, that look, you could be sitting on cash and getting an attractive return. However, if you're invested and you're seeing rates starting to rally, that you're going to make a lot more being invested than sitting on cash. And as the returns, and you know, as the returns are year to date in emerging markets fixed income improving, right, as the spreads are contracting, as the yield is very high, I think what you will see is as we go into the summer and into the second half of this year, with the Fed cutting rates, that a lot of investors will feel like, look, you know, I need to be invested. So that's my feeling personally. A lot of clients, the pension funds I've spoken to and other institutional accounts, you know, they are starting to think that way, is that, look, I mean, you know, we need to look at getting invested, because we do have this view that you are going to see rate cuts. We're not going to get the same money sitting on our money market accounts, for example, and we need to get invested. And that process takes time. I mean, you know, you have various committee meetings, et cetera.
Sure.
But I think we're heading that way.
Okay, so you've stated the case for EM very convincingly, but what could be the fly in the ointment, as Eric says?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I would say from my perspective sitting here today, that for me, the two major issues would be geopolitics, right? That we have been able to, for example, look past the issues with that are happening in Russia, Ukraine, that it's been more contained to that region. Mm-hmm. To date. And the view also is in the Middle East, for example, that the conflict happening today won't spread to other Middle Eastern countries, for example, where you have an outright sort of war, I guess, right? A massive escalation, let's put it that way.
Sure.
But geopolitics are always crucial to investing. And look, this isn't only an issue for emerging markets, but obviously if the issue in the Middle East were to escalate and oil prices were to dramatically increase, you know, it would have issues in the developed markets as well, which would also have issues for inflation, right?
Yes.
And that would be the second point. So, you know, there are what we would term for the time being shorter term issues, whether it's with shipping costs due to the geopolitics. You know, oil prices have also risen over the last, let's say, few weeks. But look, I mean, the second risk is that, look, we're wrong on inflation and it ends up being much stickier than we think. The Fed also would like to take a longer term approach. And, you know, the rates remain higher for even longer.
Yep.
And
that's
a risk.
It could be a bit like a plane, couldn't it? Coming into land, inflation falling, and then whoops, taking off again. I mean,
I mean, look, and to be fair, those aren't our base case scenarios, but you know, those are things that we always have to think about, you know, the geopolitics and obviously the inflation picture, right? Which we're all counting on to improve over the months.
Okay, should we go from geopolitics just finally to politics? Because we have got a lot of elections, not just in EM land, but in DM land too. How market moving, Woody, would you say are elections? I suppose the big one for you is India, is it?
Yeah. So our largest exposures across the active portfolios include India and Mexico, for example, right? The Indian elections, however, look, of course, we have election surprises, but I think the feeling is that the current government will remain in power. The question is, what sort of majority will they have a majority? And I think the feeling today is that the BJP and Modi will come back with a significant majority. That would lead to the anticipation is the next generation of reforms. However, if that does, and the market is pricing that in, mm-hmm. increasingly pricing that in, both I think the equity market as well as the fixed income market that we're investing in, EM Indian credit. If that isn't the case, and that, for example, Modi doesn't come in with a majority, and it's a government that is sort of a, you know, cobbled together, a minority type government. And again, I think personally, the probability of that, it is fairly low. But look, you have surprises in elections,
yes,
right?
Yes, you do. Yep. Yeah. Okay. I mean, we've covered a lot of ground. Anything else to add from you, Eric, to sign off?
I could give you just one big picture view, maybe to end with, that emerging markets account for about 38% of world output today in current US dollars. And we estimate that by 2050, they should account for 46%. That's one of the most conservative estimates out there. But anyway, that would almost be half of the global economy. So I would say an asset class that is very difficult to ignore.
And on that note, Eric, we'll leave it there. Thanks very much for your insights today. Thank you, Woody. And thank you all for listening. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal & General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website. Copyright 2023. Legal & General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal & General Investment Management Asia Limited, the licensed corporation BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission, for professional investors only.